At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Welcome, Red Sox fans. Here are the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome, everyone. The Bastards are back for this Thursday edition of the podcast. We are brought to you in part by the Minute Media Podcast Network. Quick disclaimer, as always, for any first-time listeners, this is not a homer podcast. We call it how we see it. When the Red Sox are dominating, we will celebrate that. When they are getting destroyed, we will be critical and at times savagely blunt. If you are easily offended, press the stop button immediately. But for those who embrace it, let's get rolling. I am Terry Cushman coming to you from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. By way of Windham, Maine, you can harass me on Twitter at CushmanMLB. You can find the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. And joining us tonight for the first time from the city of Canton, Massachusetts, no longer Westwood, Jason Kelly. How are you?
I'm good. Moving day, so I'm exhausted. My feet hurt. I've got a couple of scrapes and bruises, but got everything set up. Got the Red Sox on the big screen, so I'm doing just fine.
You must have rented a U-Haul.
No, I just hired a moving company.
You took the easy way out. Oh, man, you didn't tell us that.
Oh, yeah.
That's that's Astros 2017 level moving.
Yeah, well, worked out for them. It worked out for me, too.
Oh, man, I didn't know that. I did everything myself. Well, my girlfriend helped me, but all right. Also joining us tonight from the mile-high city of Denver, Colorado, by way of Quincy, Massachusetts, Andrew Dwan.
What's going on, guys?
Not a whole heck of a lot. So the audience might be wondering, whoa, this isn't the normal schedule. We're going to do the deep dives a day early, reason being if we waited to start recording at roughly 12:30 Eastern on Thursday night because of the West Coast swing, we would be up super late. So we decided to split it up this week, and we'll kind of flip the shows and then back to normal next week. So we're going to discuss managerial firings, and that could maybe lead into some other, guys on the hot seat, whatnot, across the league. But Joe Girardi was fired by the Phillies last Friday, and we kind of touched on that a little bit on the Monday show. Today, kind of surprisingly, Joe Maddon gets the axe from the Anaheim Angels after Michael Wacha's brilliant pitching performance. We'll get more into that on the Friday morning show. But I'm pretty stunned. I mean, this is, if you're going to put a top five list out in the last 20 years, I mean, Joe Maddon has to be in it. Doesn't he? Or no worse, maybe seventh or eighth, but I was stunned. Andrew, go ahead.
Yeah, it's a bad time to be a Joe.
True.
You know, I don't think this is... I don't know if the Joe Maddon firing was completely his deserved, let's say. You know, they've put together a mishmash of pieces. Yeah, they have Ohtani. Yeah, they have Trout. They don't really have the pitching. Syndergaard is what he is. He actually had a decent outing last night, but he's been up and down. They go out, they sign Anthony Rendon, who's hurt yet again. Taylor Ward is hurt right now. It just seems like there's just a negativity surrounding that clubhouse. That being said, I don't think he's to blame. The Girardi one, completely get. I think he lost the clubhouse. You have all veterans in there. And his brash kind of coming at you style doesn't always fit that kind of group, which they should have known. It's not like they signed a bunch of unknown players. But yeah, the Joe Maddon one, someone's going to pick him up. He's not going to leave. You know, he's going to sign on, probably not this year, but he'll be the first manager hired in the offseason, and that is a guarantee.
Jason.
Yeah, I agree. The Maddon firing surprised me too. Only 5 seasons, and, you know, he only lasted 5 years with the Cubs as well, but that was different. He had won a World Series there. They were clearly going to turn over the roster, so it was kind of like a, okay, we all need to move in a different direction kind of firing, or not really a firing, you just left. This was more like, they go on one losing streak and they fire the manager. I mean, that's what we're doing. And look, I'm not the biggest Joe Maddon fan. I think that he's a really good manager, but I think that a lot of what people give him credit for is just overrated small stuff in baseball that, you know, is it quirky? Has it worked for him? Yes. But I don't think the guy is like this baseball genius, baseball savant, like, I don't think that he's completely reinventing the wheel. I think he's just finding different things in the game that work for him. But that said, like, Andrew's right. I don't think this firing was completely deserved. I think that the Angels just made a panic move because I think that they're feeling the heat and they're feeling the heat in a weird way because they know that they're not the show out there. The Dodgers are the show in town, and they're getting antsy because Trout's not getting any younger. And they were lucky to land Shohei Ohtani, but I think as soon as he can get out of LA, he might leave too. You know, Andrew brought it up, a couple of, you know, weird signings, Anthony Rendon, Noah Syndergaard over the years, like picking up injury prone guys from the NL East to supplement your roster. They called up guys like Joe Adell way too early and ruined his development. It's just kind of, I don't see how it's Joe Maddon's fault that they've mismanaged the roster a little bit, which is surprising because, again, you've had the best player in baseball sitting in the middle of your lineup for how many years now, and you haven't figured out how to put a good team around him. This, to me, it felt like a weird firing, and Joe Maddon will obviously land on his feet. I'm curious to see where he's going to go after this, but this seems like a mistake from the Angels, and it feels panicky, and it feels like a mistake.
I had just put out a tweet 5 hours before he got fired, 4 or 5 hours before he got fired, asking our Twitter followers if the streak reaches 20, could he be fired? And I even kind of gave it a buffer. I said 20 or 25, could he get fired? I didn't think it was going to be after 12, and I certainly didn't think he'd be fired 4 hours later. So, you know, this is one of the best managers of the last 20 years. I mean, he was the manager that helped end the 108-year drought in Chicago. He got the Tampa Bay Rays to the World Series in 2008. And I was pretty stunned. And there's no indication right now that he was getting into it with players. There's no indication there was a big quarrel with Mike Trout or anyone like that. And I just wonder if the Phillies firing Girardi a couple weeks ago, well, last Friday rather, if that helped seal Madden's fate. If perhaps the Angels front office said, wow, look at that. You know, they just got rid of Girardi. And even with a guy like Girardi, who's won a World Series and been a very successful manager, you know, over the course of his, you know, managerial career. I mean, a May or June firing sounds early even to fire a guy like Girardi, I feel like. But here's the one thing that stands out to me. Perry Minasian, the GM for the Angels, didn't hire Madden. That was a Billy Epler hiring, who was fired in late 2020. So Minasian kind of inherits Madden. And then last winter, Minasian made a series of hirings, and one of those guys was Phil Nevin, who was previously the Yankees' third baseman for several years. So part of me thinks that this is simply Minasian putting his guy that he brought in last winter into that seat. I can't find it on Twitter. I didn't have a ton of time to look for it. I did see it on MLB Network because they displayed it on the screen. But there was a quote from Madden basically saying that front offices have too much power. And so that seems to indicate maybe there might have been a power struggle between Madden and the front office. And perhaps Nevin, who again was recently brought in by Minasian, might be more willing to, you know, go with the analytics that the front office is trying to push. So thoughts? Well,
yeah, maybe Perry doesn't believe in that rah-rah crap that, like, you know, Joe Madden's like, well, we're going to dress like cowboys on the plane this time. It's like, no, dude, these are like 24-year-old millionaires. They don't give a they don't care about this. All right. So I'm wondering if this signals more of a change in managers around the league. Are we done with the boomer type manager? I mean, we see Girardi isn't super old, but he's got that really old mentality. Madden, definitely an older guy, gone. La Russa, I don't think anyone really respects him in that clubhouse. And then earlier today, I don't know if you guys saw Don Mattingly, he gave no, you know, signs of hope. They held a 90-minute team meeting where he said, you know, everyone came out like miserable and wouldn't be surprised if they came out flat tonight. Was his direct quote that we wouldn't be, you know, they didn't. They actually scored like 12 runs, but maybe that type of manager is on their way out. Your younger guy, like, you know, a Gabe Kapler and Alex Cora, maybe that's just the future of baseball, because other than Buck Showalter, the old manager isn't really clicking with players right now.
Yeah, I think there's two things at play here. I think first, anyone who assumes a position of power where they get to delegate who works underneath them is going to want their own people. You see it all over the place. I mean, it's kind of a rough analogy, but this is what happened to Don Orsillo. Nesson had new management come in. Don wasn't their guy. There goes Don. And here comes Dave O'Brien. Unpopular choice, but the people in power who had just taken those positions, that's what they wanted. Same thing is happening here with the Angels. I think that, you know, this guy, he wants his own manager. He wants Phil Nevin in there, obviously. So I think that's part of it. I think the second thing is that I think Joe Madden's act wears thin on people pretty quick. I think he lasted 9 years in Tampa because Tampa had no other choice. He was a great manager and, you know, they were a struggling baseball market and he was able to turn, you know, chicken crap into chicken salad over there for 9 years. So he hung on there for a while. But Chicago, you know, again, they went through a rebuild, but I'm sure his act grew tired there too. I think that his bucking against analytics and like Andrew said, the gimmicky sort of, you know, dressing up for a road trip and, you know, and just kind of the air about him. He thinks he's smarter than everyone in the room. So you can see how he would easily butt heads with someone who wants to approach the game differently and wants, you know, the roster that he has to be folded in a different way and used in a different way. You could see how someone like that would butt heads with Joe Maddon, who, again, just he thinks he is, you know, he thinks he's like the guy who created baseball in the modern century. So I think his act does wear thin. I just think that the Angels wanted their own guy in place. And maybe you're right. Maybe Girardi getting fired emboldened them, because maybe they look at it and they say, hey, no sacred cows in this sport. So if Joe Girardi can get fired and, you know, Philadelphia will survive that, then this is our opportunity. We can get Joe out of here, you know, get our own guy in here and maybe turn this thing around before it's too late.
And how energized the Phillies suddenly got once Girardi was gone, I think that could have been an influence. With Andrew's point, though, we just had a World Series with a guy in his 70s managing and a guy in his late 60s. So a couple of old guys, the top free agent, you know, manager last offseason, Buck Showalter, I think in his early to mid 60s, you know, took the Mets job. That's paying dividends right now. And I really think the Mets are going to probably win the division, but if not, no worse than, you know, cruise into the wild card round. So I don't know where they're going to go. Interestingly, here's an interesting nugget. I forget where I saw this. Buck Showalter was the runner up to Joe Maddon in the Angels job. He was also the runner up to Joe Girardi with the Phillies. So it's just crazy what a turn of events. And Girardi never had success in Philadelphia, and arguably Maddon didn't either. One other thing I want to point out before I get to Alex Cora's comments. Part of me kind of thinks Madden's kind of relieved here. Like, he's worked for Theo Epstein, who put all kinds of talent around him. Probably didn't give him the pitching he wanted, but still a smart baseball guy that was working to build him a winner. And then, you know, he had some success in Tampa, you know, because they drafted so well and had so much homegrown talent. The Angels office is none of the above. The Angels office, front office, does everything wrong. You know, they trade everyone, they overpay for guys, and they haven't had pitching since they won the 2002 World Series, basically. So part of me just wonders if he's relieved to get out of there.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to have his pick of the litter. I mean, he's going to have to wait. You know, obviously, he's going to have to wait till the end of the season and, you know, see who falls out of the playoffs and who doesn't, and wait until the dust clouds settle and see what openings there are. But if there's, you know, if there's a big sort of Black Monday in MLB where six or seven jobs open up, I mean, Joe Maddon's going to be first in line. So, and maybe one of those teams is, you know, like the Marlins, who have a ton of young talent and just haven't quite been able to put it all together. But you know that Joe Maddon would love to go to a team with young talent. What about a team like Baltimore, who is, you know, maybe a year or two away from really starting to get back into contention? And I don't think their manager is any great shakes. Maybe he gets the axe and Baltimore goes and gets a big fish in Maddon to really accelerate their timeline. So, yeah, he probably is a little bit relieved. You know, but again, it will depend on how many jobs open up, because if there's only less than a handful, then he might be sitting there going, oh, geez, okay, none of these options are really great. I happen to think there's going to be more than that, because there usually is, but we'll see.
Now, this is more of an NFL move that we've seen lately, but I wonder, maybe a network comes calling, like an ESPN, or, you know, there's whatever 2,000 different streaming services MLB is going to make us buy within the next 2 years to watch a random game on a Tuesday. Like, if he'll be the voice of that, like, you know, if the money is, you know, somewhat equal, does that, the, you know, the lack of stress of an everyday job, is that more, you know, appealing to him? I don't know. I guess we'll definitely see, but yeah, he'll be linked to everything coming up.
He did do a Q&A with Ken Rosenthal shortly after getting the axe, and he said in no uncertain terms he does want to manage again. So whether he may wait for an opportunity that he likes, which could take a couple of years. But Jason's on to something, though. I don't know that he's going to take the Marlins because that front office isn't committed to spending money. So he would have to work really hard with what they have, with the talent they have. Baltimore's extremely interesting because they will spend a little bit of money. They're never going to be a top five or six market, but we did see them make a play for Correa this year. They gave Chris Davis that big contract. It was stupid, but it's at least an example of them willing to spend. That's interesting. I don't know how they feel about Brandon Hyde. We saw guys like Scott Service and Ned Yost get to, you know, they were on the bottom, and as the teams ascended, those guys stayed in place. I do wonder, though, if Service will get the axe because they have underperformed this year. I think, Andrew, you had them going as far as the ALCS, I think, against Toronto.
They've been brutal.
And yeah, I'm almost positive I had them at least as a wild card team. So that's a possible destination.
What about the Yankees if they flame out in the first round and get swept, even though Boone got an extra year added to his contract?
Yeah, the Yankees could certainly be in play if Tony La Russa gets the axe, which is very possible. The White Sox may be in play as well. I'm just kind of going down. I don't know what about Houston? Would they get rid of Baker? Maybe. I think that's a possibility. Actually, you know what? That could be a possibility because James Click, their GM, comes from Tampa. So don't rule out the Astros in there. I don't know if Philadelphia will want him after the season's over. Maybe they'll look at it as another Girardi situation. Just bear with me. I'm almost done. I'm going through the National League right now. I don't think there's any desire. I think everybody's safe in the West. I think Roberts is safe. Melvin's safe. Kapler's safe. The Central's a wasteland. Craig Counsell isn't going anywhere. I guess we couldn't rule out St. Louis, but there's going to be a lot of teams, and people will fire their current manager who shouldn't be on the hot seat to get a guy like Madden. Like, there'll be another undeserved firing. So, you know, just we'll see. But I think there's going to be plenty of opportunities this season. So here's Alex Cora's comments, and I thought they were interesting. Maybe you guys won't find them as interesting as me. But Alex Cora was asked by the beat writers today, and Cora's response was, quote, "Joe Madden will be fine. It's a tough one because that's going to happen to all of us at some point. Either they don't renew your contract or they kick you to the curb." And just a moment later, he goes, "It sucks, right?" That's kind of telling because Cora's being very self-aware there. Like, he knows he's probably going to get the axe. He technically has once, but I still think there might have been a wink, wink, nod, nod, you know, with, you know, we're going to bring you back after the year suspension. But one of the things I wonder from that was when we were at our lowest point this year, which was probably in, I don't know, mid-May when the White Sox swept us. I think we were 11-19 after that series. I'm wondering if Cora felt a little vulnerable, perhaps. And we're seeing guys get the axe left and right. So do you guys read into that at all?
I might read into it a little bit only because there's always been that question ever since Kai and Bloom got here of how much do him and Alex Cora really mesh? You know, is Alex Cora a big analytics guy like Bloom is? Now, some people will tell you, yes, he is, but then they'll always throw in the caveat, but he also believes in managing the game as it comes to him and letting the, you know, having a feel for the game, letting himself kind of be immersed in it. And that's kind of against Kai and Bloom's philosophy. Again, Kai and Bloom's big into just everything's a calculation, analytics are everything, and, you know, all of that. So if the Red Sox are struggling and, you know, Alex Cora is making instinct calls and gut calls and they're not working out, then yeah, I could see him feeling a little bit vulnerable and maybe, you know, he's hearing whispers from the front office saying, hey, you know, if you just stuck to what we told you, this wouldn't be a problem. And at the same time, I'm sure Cora tells them, well, if you stuck me with a better roster, this wouldn't have happened. So, and I'm not saying that there is any tension between the two. I don't think there is at all, quite frankly. But if the Red Sox go on another skid, then yeah, I think Cora could definitely feel the heat a little bit. Because again, he's not Bloom's guy. You know, he's there because I think ownership wants him. But I'm not sure he's Bloom's guy. I think if it were up to Kai and Bloom, he would have a much different manager in place. So there is always that sort of cloud hanging over. It's like, okay, Cora is the manager of the fans, and I think ownership likes him too, but I don't think he's Bloom's guy. And if the Red Sox miss the playoffs this year, especially if they miss it badly and they go on a skid, you know, he could very well be vulnerable.
I don't think he is. I also don't think, I mean, he mentioned it earlier this year. He doesn't want to do this for a long time. He's like, I don't want to be one of those, you know, tenured managers that's, you know, just been around since, you know, the Bobby Coxes of the world. He has two young daughters. He doesn't want to miss them growing up too much. I think he's got probably the rest of this Red Sox, whatever his contract is, I think two, three years. I think he's done after that just on his own terms. I think he'll probably move. I could see him doing something similar to like what Brad Stevens did and just going to the front office. He's home at 5 p.m. He can do whatever he wants. He doesn't have to travel 81 times a year. I think Alex Cora is here for just the remainder of this contract, and then he's moving up. And it might not be with the Red Sox, but yeah, I think he'll take a job in a front office eventually.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see a scenario in which he would be fired this year. I was just wondering if perhaps maybe he felt a little vulnerable after that terrible start. And I think it is unsettling to him to see a guy like Madden get fired. I don't think he sees any comfort in that at all. And Madden took that job because he had coached there. He was, I don't remember what his role was on the Angels 2002 World Series team, but he was a coach and was involved in it and had relationships there. So it just seemed like a very safe gig for Madden. Not one I certainly saw him getting fired from, but yeah, so I just thought those comments from Cora were a little interesting. And I guess I'll point this out. I don't, like I said, I don't want to get too into this series, but if you're an Alex Cora guy, it would probably be encouraging to a lot of those people that the Red Sox have had three pitchers in the last two or three weeks throw a complete game, because nine inning starting pitching outings, that's like the most anti Heim Bloom thing ever. You know, usually there's a plan and this reliever is coming in after the third time through the order, or perhaps in a certain inning. And so seeing these complete games kind of would, you know, point to the idea that Alex Cora has a ton of control here on what's happening, you know, in the games. And we're in our last 26 games, we're 18-8. So playing pretty well. I'm still mad about game one of the Baltimore series, blowing that 6-run lead we had. But yeah, so any final thoughts?
No, I was just going to add on. It's also encouraging to see that he's letting pitchers throw complete game shutouts. And one of them is Kyan Bloom's shiniest new toy in Michael Walker. You know, yeah. It's one thing if it's Eovaldi and, you know, he's been here for a while. He's a veteran. But Nick Pivetta, too, actually. I mean, Pivetta was a Bloom transaction. But
yeah.
Particularly Michael Walker, who, you know, we all talk about all the time. We didn't really want him when the signing first happened. He had a terrible year last year. Bloom gives him a raise, and we're all like, what is Kyan Bloom doing? And now the guy's turned into, like, the second best pitcher on the staff. So for Alex Cora to let him go out there and keep him out there for 9 innings for a complete game shutout, I think you're right. I think it says that either Bloom trusts him to do it, or he's just telling him, don't worry, I got this, Kyan. Don't worry. I know what I'm doing.
Rich Hill, too. I mean, it wasn't a complete game, but he threw into the seventh, which
yeah.
is pretty damn good for a 42-year-old.
Right, yeah. Yeah, you'll take 6 full from him. I think he did pitch into the seventh once, but he always has a short leash when it happens. And I think both times when the first guy got on, they took him out. But yeah, so seeing starters go deep, you know, I hope for the Red Sox sake. I mean, I know I'm a big critic of Alex Cora at times, but I mean, I certainly don't want to see him get tossed, you know, anytime soon. And he is a top 3 or 4 manager in the game. So, well, all right, we'll be back tomorrow for the regular show to discuss what else happened in this Angels series. So hopefully it ends on a good note. And as of this recording, we're 1 game above 500. So that's a winning record. So everyone have a good Thursday, and take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.